My name is Josh Kahn. I'm the performance director of the Creative Alliance. I might be the only non-actor here on the stage, but that's okay. I got my start in this crazy world DJing bar and bat mitzvahs when I was in eighth grade. I was hired by a man with one leg who was laser focused on becoming the king of the bar and bat mitzvah party scene in Northeast Philadelphia. But that's not the story I'm going to tell tonight. That's for a different stoop altogether. By the time I got to college, I was totally done with playing the Macarena at Susie Greenstein's bat mitzvah. And I was ready for something different, so I finagled my way into a production internship with an organization called the National Council for the Traditional Arts. They're located in Silver Spring, Maryland, right outside of Washington, D.C., just south of Baltimore. And they do all sorts of different things, but their flagship event is a festival called the National Folk Festival. It's been around since 1933, and it moves to a different community every 3 years, kind of setting up this really wonderful, movable feast of music and culture, really celebrating traditional culture here in the United States and abroad. And when I started there, it was beginning the first of 3 years of the National Folk Festival in Bangor, Maine. And I was 20 years old, and I had a number of different tasks there at the festival, trying to learn, get accustomed to what was happening in the production world. And the first task I had to do was manage the archival recordings that were happening at the festival. So the National Council for the Traditional Arts has an agreement with the Library of Congress, specifically the American Folklife Center at the Library of Congress, where all of the recordings that happen on these festival stages, the music, the conversation, gets digitized and archived at the American Folklife Center. And this year at the festival, you know, there's all sorts of amazing things that were happening. The last of the French lumberjack fiddlers and Maine country bands, and there were variety arts like mime and comedy, and there were cowboy poets and fisher poets, and it was just like, it blew my mind, right? And my job was to make sure to work with this team of very passionate volunteers to go to every stage, record everything, and then also to make a log of what was happening on stage. Now, what they were supposed to do is, when they would hit record, and then they were supposed to take this log and make a set list, what was going on. Now, I also told them, now, here's what we need to do. During this archival process, if anything happens on stage, because this is just an oral recording, make a little note. You know, if a plane flies really low overhead, say, like, you know, that whooshing sound was a plane flying overhead. So 20 years from now, an archivist isn't like, what the hell just happened on that stage? Which is great, but they took my words a little too literally, because halfway through the day on Saturday, I got a call from one of the stages on my radio, and it said, Josh, we're out of logger sheets here at our stage, and I, you know, this is my first year doing it, and I really wanted to do a good job, and so I made sure that every stage had, you know, a backup of a backup for these logger sheets. So I said to him, I was like, what? So I got on the radio, and I said, what happened? And there was a beat for a minute or two, and then they said, they logged the mime. And I said, what? They logged the mime. Now, you can now go to the American Folklife Center at the Library of Congress, and you can go and you can find this recording, which is 45 minutes of complete silence, punctuated every once in a while by maybe some confused applause. And then accompanying it is 19 pages, single-spaced, of some of those beautifully described miming routine that you can imagine. That includes, you know, like, he's pulling a rope, he's pulling a rope, he can't pull the rope anymore, the rope's not moving, and the mime's in a box, he's in a box, he's at the top of the box, he's pulling the box down. It goes on and on and on, and they were like, you said to us, say exactly what's happening on the stage. And I thought, there's no way they would log the mime. But they did. But that wasn't the end of what I had to do at the festival, because my main job at the festival was stage managing. They weren't going to give me like a real deal important stage, because this is my first year and I'm 20 years old. They kicked me over to the family area, where there's this little stage under 10. It's about a 30 by 60 space. And running along the lip of the stage is a thin tension wire, about yay high, and maybe 3 millimeters thick. You could barely see it, but it's designed to hold the tent together with just some general tension and pressure. So if wind comes or somebody knocks into one of the walls, the tent doesn't fall apart and collapse on everybody. And it really wasn't that big of an issue. I probably should have been like, hey, that tension wire shouldn't be there, but I didn't say anything because I'm 20 and I don't know what I'm doing. And it's fine for most of the festival until the end of the day on Sunday when there's a breakdance crew that's coming on that stage. And I should have said, hey, guys, there's a tension wire right above your head. Be careful of that. But I didn't. I said, have a good show. And what they don't tell me is that they're going to kick off the show by doing a front flip off the stage. The leader of the group gets there. They're called Nothing But Skill out of New York. He gets to the front of the stage. He does a standing front flip, does 180, gets his feet caught in that tension wire, and boom, like a sack of potatoes on the ground. He is completely unconscious. Now, this isn't chairs. These are kids and mothers just sitting on the ground, and he's kind of splayed out over top of them, and I run over to him, and his eyes are, you know, flickering behind his eyelids. Now, what I should have done is get on the radio and say, calmly, I need a paramedic at the family stage. Somebody has passed out. But what I did do is scream something totally unintelligible over and over and over and over and over again into the radio. They had no idea on the other end what the hell I was saying. By the time I coherently was able to talk about what the heck actually happened, this dancer has stood up, shook himself off, and then performed for 45 more minutes. The paramedics came, they checked him out, they were like, I guess he's fine. And I thought, all right, the logging sheet, the breakdancer, this has got to be the end. There's only one more set of the day. And that set, why was it a folk festival? It's a totally different story. It was an entomologist. So this is a scientist that studies bugs, and he's here to show off to all the kiddos all of his creepy, crawly critter things, and the kids love it. And so he comes out, and he's got big spiders, and he's showing them, and scorpions, and they're like, ah, oh, this is crazy. And then he's going to finish the whole show, his final piece, the big moment. His prized possession is a giant, hissing Madagascar cockroach. Have you ever seen one of these things? They're like the size of my hand, the full thing. They have scales that will run across all the way along the back. They kind of look like a character out of Mad Max, and they hiss. But the one thing they do not do is fly. They don't have wings, and they do not fly, and all you should be able to do is say to an audience, these don't have wings, they don't fly, end of story. But no, he had to prove to them that this Madagascar hissing cockroach does not fly. Now, I stood from the side of the stage, and this runs through my head like a piece of slow-mo cinema. He takes this cockroach, and he says, look, it doesn't have wings. It can't fly. I can throw it up in the air. Now, remember, in front of him are just, like, toddlers and their parents. Their prime audience for Madagascar hissing cockroaches. And he throws this thing up in the air, and it hits this tiny, thin tension wire, and boom, bounces 6 feet out into the audience. And it is goddamn mayhem, total pandemonium. Kids are crying, mothers are crying even more. The entomologist dives off stage trying to save his prize Madagascar hitting cockroach. Now, what I should have done, I don't really know, actually, at this point. I don't know if you're supposed to say bug down or what, but I got on the radio and I screamed something totally unintelligible. Eventually, we got everybody settled down. The cockroach was not killed. The cockroach was saved. It's all fine. The entomologist got his cockroach back, and the festival ended. I was made fun of for a long time by everyone on the other end of the radio, and I figured they would never invite me back, but they did. They invited me back the next year and the year after, and eventually I started booking that festival. And actually, this year is the 16th year of the festival. I'm still booking that festival. It's called the American Folk Festival on the Bangor waterfront now. And if you want to come up, it's August 25th through 27th. And I promise you, the only bugs that you can find at the American Folk Festival now are lobster. Thank you.